A lot of people are waiting for the other shoe to drop on DACA. DACA is the delayed action for childhood arrivals. President Obama chose not to move toward deportation for younger people who arrived in the country as children outside the legal immigration process. President Trump says he wants to end DACA, just not immediately. He effectively gave a grace period in the hope that Congress will do what it has not done for years, which is pass a comprehensive immigration reform bill that addresses the childhood arrivals and other situations. The Trump decision to end DACA came with sharp reactions from college campuses across the country. All of Oregon's public university presidents criticized the decision. We can go a little further into reactions from campus and from affected students as well. Two guests with us from Southern Oregon University, Marjorie Trueblood Gamble is the university's director of diversity and inclusion. Marjorie, good to see you again.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. And Linda Escott Miranda is a student in her third year now at Southern Oregon University. Linda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Marjorie, let's start with you. I mean, the reaction was so instantaneous. I noticed that the reactions are still coming in, even though the Wyoming congressional delegation, for example, is fine with the DACA decision. The university presidents at the public universities in Wyoming went on record yesterday as opposing the Trump DACA decision. I mean, was this the kind of thing that didn't take much thought from the universities?
I think that through our strategic planning process and reviewing and renewing our values and commitments, our commitment for equity, diversity, and inclusion made this a no-brainer for our institution. And recognizing that we have support from our campus to pursue these issues, let our leadership to know that we can support our DACA students and come out against this decision.
There was an interesting shade to this for Southern Oregon University in particular, too, because the president was actually not on campus the day the DACA decision was announced. And she was where?
I am not sure.
She was in Guanajuato.
Yeah, she was in Guanajuato. And when she was having a conversation with the president down there in terms of what does this decision mean and how might we partner for our student success in the future. And so it's been very inspiring, the partnership that we have with Guanajuato, and thinking about how can we ensure that our SOU students can still have success in getting an SOU degree.
How important do you think DACA has been to some SOU students?
I think it's been tremendously important, and I'm looking forward to hearing what Linda has to say about her experience and how it's profoundly impacted her, but not just for the students, but for what they contribute to our campus.
When I went back and did the math, Linda Escott, it looks like you were in middle school when President Obama announced DACA, the Delayed Action for Childhood Arrivals. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And what was your understanding of it at the time? I mean, was this something that had been a big issue to you as you were growing up?
Well, when it first came out, the DACA program, I didn't know how much it was going to impact my life just because I was very young at that age, and I felt like I was very naive because my parents, I was brought here to America when I was 6 years old. So I was kind of, in a way, I was sheltered because it was a new place. It was a new country, new culture, everything. And my parents tried everything they could to just kind of like shelter me and protect me. So in a way, I was very naive. I did feel like an outcast. I felt like I had to really try to fit in. For some reason, I just felt, you know, like the black sheep in a classroom. And it was because I had dark hair and I had tan skin. And then I know I did struggle with the language at first. And I remember some of my, like, peers just teasing me because I couldn't pronounce some of the words. So I would go home and I would tell my mom and we would sit down and I would practice these words. So when the DACA program came out, I didn't know how that was going to affect me. Not until years later when it opened up so many opportunities. Just the simple privilege of driving, having my driver's license, being able to have a car, being able to have car insurance, being able to get from place A to place B without a problem. Now that the program is ending, it's something that a lot of people take for granted, and you're like, how am I going to get to those places if I can't drive there? So it is a terrifying thing to think about because, like you said, I am in my third year of college and I still have this year and next year. And my DACA my permit expires in the fall of my senior year.
So you're still under the permit. You don't have a green card yet?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. So it expires that fall term of my senior year, and it's kind of scary to think about it. I'm like, how am I going to get to school? How am I going to finish winter term and spring term to get my degree in biology?
You have high hopes. I mean, biology is just the beginning of it, from what I understand. What is it you want to do eventually for a career?
My hopes and my dreams were to apply for medical school and just start a career as a pediatrician. I've always loved to work with children. That was where my heart was at, and that's why I started as an education major, because I wanted to work with them. But I wasn't confident in myself, and I doubted myself, and I was like, there's no way, like, me being a Latina, a woman, a female, like, there's no way of me getting into medical school. So I chose to, you know, be a teacher, play it safe. And then not until spring term of my first year in college, I took a physics class. And it just reminded me of how much I loved science, because my junior year in high school, I took a lot of, like, science courses, and I really enjoyed them. And that passion that I had back then was just inspired again, and that's when I was like, I have to change my major. Like, I have to be in the science field. Like, I have to do it for myself.
So you're back on the pediatrician pathway?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Marjorie Trueblood Gamble is one of our guests on the Jefferson Exchange, the Southern Oregon University Director of Diversity and Inclusion. Linda Escott Miranda is a student and obviously a person under the DACA program. So we're talking about DACA, the Delayed Action on Childhood Arrivals, and the decision by President Trump to essentially end the program with a bit of a grace period to see if Congress will do something within the 6 months since he made his announcement in early September. You can join this conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Long way of saying, Marjorie, next question yours. Any idea how many students we're talking about here with DACA status on the SOU campus?
We have a few students on our campus, but we care deeply about each and every one of our students that is here, and so we're doing all that we can to support them and ensure their success. So probably between maybe 10 to 20 students on our campus.
Okay, so not a huge number. But I wonder if any of them, given that the announcement was made between, you know, summer vacation and the resumption of classes, if anybody did not come back to school because of this, if the concern was great enough there.
I am not sure about that. Mm-hmm. I know that there have been some other programs in the community to try to help folks re-up their paperwork and to extend their DACA forms. This past weekend, I know that there were some workshops to support folks, and I know that our Office of Student Support and Intervention has worked with a couple of folks to ensure that they could still be ready, but I have not heard anyone directly say that they aren't coming back, or I haven't heard from other folks indirectly saying that they aren't coming back. So I think that everybody is just trying to play it by ear and trying to figure out what this all means for everyone.
I did notice there's a deadline coming up. It looks like October 5th for getting the permits reauthorized, because that still can happen.
I believe so. I know that there were workshops in Medford this weekend, and there were also workshops in the Portland area.
So tell us what, let's come back to your story, Linda Escott, and give us a sense. Now, you said you were 6 years old when you got here. Didn't know any English at all?
No, I didn't know any English. I was 6 years old. I turned seven here. The first elementary school that I went to, because I went to a couple, we moved a lot. It was Howard Elementary School, and that was very hard because I was placed with someone who wasn't bilingual. So I remember my, like, classmate, he was bilingual, so he would interpret to me. And, like, I look back at this experience, and I'm just, like, really, it's just, I get really emotional because, like, I was that young, and then having another classmate of mine just, like, translate to me because I couldn't communicate with the teacher. And he would always, like, offer to share his crayons with me. So I thought that was really nice. I did have my second grade teacher the following year. I remember her. She kind of took me under her wing, and she would always ask me if I had everything that I needed. And she had a daughter the same age as me. And I remember at the end of the week, she would always bring me, like, extra clothes. And, like, to me, that, like, meant a lot.
So people really took care of you. I mean, it's great to hear that a first grader was helping you. Do you stay in touch with him, I wonder?
Yeah, we're still friends.
That's a great story. Aside from the individual stories, though, you get back to the legal backdrop of this, and I'm sure you hear this a lot, the question about, you know, what about the fact that your parents brought you here against the law? And how does that register on your mind?
That's a tough question, and how that registers in my mind, I see it as I didn't choose to come here, and I've done a couple interviews, and I've said this. I'm like, this is the only home I know. Like, this is home to me.
All right, I understand. Let me give you a second here to compose yourself. And Marjorie, give us a sense of, you said not many students on campus with this, but this seems like quite a thicket of paperwork and other issues that people have to wade through.
I have no idea what the full process looks like, but I know that it is a little bit spendy, and that just trying to stay on top of all of the paperwork and to make sure that you have that, in addition to whether you want to be out in terms of people knowing that you are a DACA recipient, there's a huge backlash against folks, and so it takes a tremendous amount of courage. I can't speak for Linda with the last question, but as a parent of a soon-to-be 10-year-old son who loves him deeply, trying to do whatever you can to ensure that your child will be successful and have everything that they need to make it through life. We all make choices, and we all do the best. Well, a lot of us try to do the best that we can for ourselves and for our offspring. And so I think that that's really important to call out, and that we all make decisions, and her parents made the decision that they thought would be best for their family too, in spite of what laws we have. And so it's interesting about what is legal and what we deem to be criminal.
Interesting. So how big a thicket of paperwork has it been for you to deal with over the years, Linda? I mean, how many forms can you remember filling out, and photographs getting taken, and anything else?
It's a process. You have to write like a page long paper of like why. Well, the first time I did it, I had to do it of why I wanted the work permit. And I remember writing about, I was still in high school, and I remember writing about like, oh, I want to go to college, and having a DACA permit is going to get me closer to that step of going to college and studying what I really like to study in school. So it is a process. You have to apply. You have to apply before your DACA expires, and it typically they tell you to like apply within 4 months before your permit expires, because it is a process. And then depending if you want to do it on your own or if you get an attorney to fill it out for you, having the option of having an attorney is that it's easier and you don't have to deal with so much of the paperwork, but it is spendy. I remember my parents trying to just pull money because they didn't have to just pay for my permit. They had to pay for my brother's permit too. And it's a spendy cost. And then they would give you an appointment to get your fingerprints, and you had to take time out of your day. Or I remember one time my appointment was right when I had a chemistry lab last year. And I was like, oh, I can't really make up lab, but I can't really miss this. And I just remember going into my professor's office, and just like, I just felt so like embarrassed to say that, oh, I'm like, I have to miss school because of something like legally that I have to drive up to Portland and get my fingerprints. And just even going into that office in Portland, like, you would walk in and they would immediately look at you, and like, I just felt like a criminal just because that word illegally just has a bad connotation, and if you're labeled illegally, automatically you're seen as a criminal. So I just remember all those like processes you had to go through, and then get your fingerprints taken, and then your photo, and it's a process. Emotionally, you're tired. Physically, you're tired because it's a long drive. but it's worth it.
Do you is there any mixture in your family? I know I've worked with some people who were DACA recipients, and yet their siblings had been born in the United States and were full citizens for that reason.
Yeah, my family is very small. I have my mom and my stepdad, and then my younger brother, who's a DACA recipient, he's exactly 1 year younger than me. And then there's my little brother, who is a 10-year-old, and he's brilliant. And I just see so much energy in him, and like I can see the like his whole future and how it's going to play out. And I just look at him, and it's like I try to. He's a 10-year-old, so he doesn't really know what's going on, but I really try to emphasize it. It's like, when you grow up, you're going to go to school, and you're going to go to Harvard University, you're going to go to Berkeley, you're going to go to some major school. And he looks at me, and he's like, but I want to stay home, and I want to go to RCC.
The wisdom of the 10-year-old. We're talking about DACA with Linda Escott Miranda, who's a student at Southern Oregon University, and Marjorie Trueblood Gamble, who is the university's Director of Diversity and Inclusion. Your questions are welcome here at the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So it's the interest in education sounds very strong in your family.
Yeah. I look at my mom and I see how strong she is and how strong she has been through the years. Just, I know it was really hard for her and for my real dad to bring us here. They thought it was going to be the best for us. They thought we were going to have a lot more opportunities here, just because in Mexico, where we used to live, it wasn't very safe for us. And my mom told me, she's like, if we stay where we were at, like, I don't think you would have been this far in life. And it's something scary to think about, because it's like, I could have had two different lives.
Truly, yeah. So did your parents leave because of violence or because of economy or both?
Just because of both. The economy and then the violence. And my mom's sister was up here, and she decided to just give us a better future by bringing us to America. And she saw that we were going to have more opportunities here. And then just from being here, I remember all the time she would tell us, like, you're going to go to college, you're going to get an education, you're going to have a better life than what I had and how I grew up, and it's going to be better for you and your brother. And so every day I remember I would cry every single day before going to school. I didn't want to go to school. It was just a new environment for me. I didn't feel comfortable. But as the years progressed, I really fell in love with learning just how, like, the world works and, like, the small little details. And there's not a lot of, like, discrimination. And it's just, you study and you learn about what is life, and you worry about less about the skin, the color on people's skin, or how you look or how you don't look like. And it's just something, it's an environment where I really like to be at.
You've learned so much about so many things, it sounds like. And how soon before you could not have to crib off the kid next to you in class? I mean, how quickly did you get fluent in English?
How quickly?
In elementary school, yeah.
I think it took me like 2 years.
Okay, so 2 years for that. But then I wonder how much you've paid attention to the political system and all the other things that are going on in the news that affect your life.
Lately, a lot.
Lately, a lot, sure.
Yeah, but growing up, like I said, I was very naive and I was very sheltered, so I didn't know what was going on. Mm. But now I try to keep up with, like, the political and the news and everything, but I know I do get overwhelmed, and it kind of discourages me because it's a lot of, like, back and forth, and I don't really want to get my hopes up, because I remember when I heard Trump was ending the program, I remember that day very clearly. I was in shock all day. I didn't know how to feel.
And let's point out too, about, because the process you were talking about, I mean, as part of agreeing to become part of the DACA program, you actually did come out of the shadows, did get your fingerprints taken, all that stuff. So you essentially registered And so now there's all this information on you.
Oh, yeah. That is, like you said, yeah, growing up, I did feel like I, like, lived in the shadows because telling people that you were undocumented was a big no-no. Like, you don't tell anyone that you're undocumented. So even with school, you do, like, little small projects, and it's like, where you're from, or, and I know I would always say I was from California because I have family there. But it's something, like, you grow up to, and it, like, it takes a toll on your identity and who you are, because you grow up saying all these things that aren't true. Like, you don't feel comfortable saying you're from Mexico, because automatically they're going to assume that you're illegal here.
All right, so a bit of a road ahead. And Marjorie Trueblood Gamble, what kind of assistance in the university, I know, acknowledges very clearly that Oregon is a sanctuary state, so there's nothing, like, nothing's going to happen to DACA students on campus should the program drop completely or anything like that.
We have several contingency plans should it be fully rescinded. We are very appreciative that Oregon is a sanctuary state and that Ashland is a sanctuary city. And looking over some documents from the mayor of Ashland and renewing the inclusion commitments to all of our folks, we definitely have some things that we want to do to ensure the support and success of our students. And so,
okay, Linda Ascott Miranda, final question: are you able to keep your eyes on your classes? Are you really focused now that this term is what, a week old?
Yeah, I really am taking organic chemistry right now, and I'm loving it. I love chemistry, so it's going to be a fun fall term.
Okay, and we'll keep our eyes on you for medical school in the years ahead. Linda Ascott Miranda is a DACA recipient student at Southern Oregon University. Marjorie Trueblood Gamble is the university's Director of Diversity and Inclusion. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you.